Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So there you have it, my friends. Money. Attitudes towards money. And money attitudes. So if one of the engineers would please get in touch with us, we would like to straighten this out. But in the meantime, let's talk about this. We have a guest in the studio with us today, Nick Papadopoulos. Now, what Nick does, and has done very successfully with people, he's a coach. And what he does, he's been on previous programs with us, he helps people look at their attitudes towards money, because most of the things that have people feeling poor is attitude and not the actual finance. Once you understand what money means to you and the reasons why you buy, and you'll have a lot more control over your financial future. Having knowledge about your attitude is a first step. Now, you could change your attitude towards money by yourself. You could develop it by developing personal budgets or something, but there's stuff to it. Why we don't allow it. Why some people have and other people don't. Let's take a look at this with Nick. Nick, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand. Good to be on the show. And I love what you've done with the sound here.
Even though nobody knows what we're talking about.
Right.
Go ahead.
It's good to be back on the show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love that song, Money Makes the World Go Round. It definitely does. For sometimes the better, sometimes the worse, sometimes for empowerment, sometimes for disempowerment. It definitely makes the world go round. And I know that it's funny. I think of a Pink Floyd song where they said the root of all evil is money. And in the movies, you hear about Michael Douglas, greed is good. There's so much attachment and so much meaning that's given to money. The only thing I will agree with is what the song said. Money does make the world go round. But Pink Floyd's commentary or Michael Douglas in the movies, that's all adding meaning to money. And that's what people do.
Well, what is money, Nick? What is it itself?
It's,
there was a recent movie I saw. It was fabulous. I was going to recommend it to you. Called In Time. Did I mention it to you?
You have not.
I have not. It was a movie I saw on TV where it was a futuristic movie.
Okay.
And in this movie, people didn't have money. All they had was time.
Right.
And the time was imprinted on their arms. And it was kind of like it counted down. And all you had was 50 years. And when you bought a quart of milk, you had to give them like 3 minutes.
Okay.
And when you earned a job, they paid you in minutes. And it was all about just minutes. That's what money seems to be about, time. That the more money you have, the more time you have, in one way or another. You know what I mean? If you have more money, you don't have to wait online as much. You could order your tickets. If you have more money, you could do certain things. It's all about saving time.
Mm-hmm.
So what's more important, time or money? Or do we have an illusion that what we're looking for is money, but what we're really asking for is time, like time to relax, time to enjoy ourselves,
right,
time to go on vacation.
Right.
How do we confuse the two, or how easy it is to confuse the two?
We add so much, just going back to my comment before, we add so much meaning to money. Money becomes, some of the meanings that people attach can be, I'm better than you or others. Or it's an opportunity for me to get noticed, or it feeds my ego, or feeds an addiction I have. It's a way to measure my success versus my father, let's say. Or it gets muddled, and money becomes something completely different. At the end of the day, if you just take U.S. currency, a dollar bill is just a dollar bill. And that's all it is. That's the fact. It's a dollar bill. And you can do certain things with it, and certain things you can't do with it. Everything else is made up by humans.
Well, you made a lot of reference to, or suggested reference to, a relationship between a person, let's say a man, and his father in some way may affect his attitude towards money.
Right.
You talk about that?
Sure. I'll share a personal story. About 12 years ago, I earned a check that was a bonus check from the company I was working for, and it was $46,000. And my father, who's a Greek immigrant, on his best year made $40,000. And I felt awful when I made that money. It made me ill, actually. I was so uncomfortable having made that much money because I had always wanted my father's affection, my father's attention, and I thought by making more money than he was had ever made in a year, I was making getting one check, that he may not like me. This would be an opportunity to drive us even further apart. So a week later, I ended up quitting that job because I was so uncomfortable having made money because I didn't want to beat Dad.
And a lot of people do that. A lot of people have a ceiling. And the ceiling is, don't exceed your father.
Right.
Because if you exceed your father, you lose him. In other words, you become your father's father, and you lose your dad himself. And
right.
Sometimes you just want to have that picture of him up there, although nowadays it's pretty hard not to exceed your father. Most kids nowadays, they have a father who's still got, an analog clock.
Right.
And these kids are so swifty and learning so much so fast that you leave your parents behind you quickly. Money becomes even a different thing, the kind of money that people shoot for. It's very different.
Right.
So back to your trying to love and respect your parents. Now comes this other influence of your mother and how your mother feels about you and money and how that affects you.
Yes, Nick, I'd like to ask you, do you see any play here when you talk about attitudes and what we attach to money? Usually, I guess it's learned in the home.
It is learned in the home. I would say it falls into two camps. There's the camp of abundance and the world of possibilities, and then there's the world of chaos and scarcity. And the environment I grew up in, for example, was chaos and scarcity, and there's not enough. There's not enough money. There's not enough time, speaking of time. And so what drives me when I'm making a decision to purchase something or not, or to engage something where I have to invest money, there's that scarcity conversation is in the backdrop because that's the world that I grew up in. So absolutely, how your parents talk about the language they use, how they relate to money, has an influence in how you are today as relates to money.
And how about the mom in the household? Do you think you spoke about the dad and the dad's relationship as a male child, but how would you think the mother would have a role in that definition of how money and the attitude that children can acquire about that?
Well, I would say that the mother's reaction to the husband in their ability, you know, for the husband to bring money home or not bring money home, and how they react and how they comfort and support or don't comfort and support, definitely has an influence. I have a friend, for example, whose father, was very much judged in the family by the amount of money that he brought in. And so he now buys their family gifts because he's trying to compensate for the father. So the father now has all these prizes so that his wife can see him in a different light. So I do think that has an influence.
And quite often, I think a mother would like to keep a child from earning money. I've seen so many mothers sabotage their son's future, even though they think they're pushing their son towards success. What they really want to do is infantilize the child. They want that child not to succeed so that he will stay dependent. And you'll see it when you see men who seem like little boys. And they seem like little boys in the world of finance. They seem completely lost. And what you could be sure of is somewhere behind them, there's a mother who's saying, "It's all right, kitty. I've got arms waiting for you. No matter what you do, you're fine. You don't have to be on your own. You don't have to live out there. You don't have to find a wife. You don't have to have children. You don't need a job. You've always got me."
Exactly. And that happened to me. My first job was a paper route, which to this day is still my favorite position.
Paper route?
Yeah, loved it. Sold Daily News.
Linda, what was your first job?
My first job was in Woolworths when I was 16 years old in Oceanside. I worked in Woolworths in the Five and Dime. I was a sales clerk.
Do you know what my first job was? Are you ready? Anybody who can guess. My first job was folding diapers. It was 15 cents an hour. I worked in a laundromat. Job was to fold diapers.
Excellent. Look where you are today.
Look where I am today, still folding diapers.
But when I came home from my first week of collecting money, I made $100, which is a lot
amazing,
of money.
Amazing, amazing to have money.
Yes.
And the first thing that happened, my mother took the money and said, "You don't know what to do with this. Let me have it, and I will save it for you and tell you how to use it because you're irresponsible. You won't know what to do with this." And that was my first experience having made money and how to be with money, which was you can't handle it. And I need, speaking of my mother, I need to protect you from this evil money that, you know, you're going to do something bad with it.
Nick, there are a lot of people out there who have kind of given up. They're in debt. They get a call from somebody, I need money for this. Sure, I'll send you the money. I got to buy tickets. I'll send you the tickets. They kind of give up. They see themselves as being the person who is no longer going to make it work. Something will make it work. Until they collapse, of course, until, you know, it falls out from underneath them, or it doesn't, unless they get bailed out by somebody. But there are some people who have abandoned their responsibility in keeping things in proportion. So now, when a friend calls and says, "Oh, I'm so upset, I need to get a new car," Maybe you could use a used one and I'll lend you some money. It's like it's always coming out of somewhere, going to somewhere, but not coming out of a filled coffer. Mm-hmm. So when you don't have money and you give money away and you don't have money, but it just puts you in debt, that seems to be a very strange attitude, and it seems to be one that a lot of people have.
Right. Well, it's interesting because on the surface it seems like they're being irresponsible, right? They don't have money or they're in debt already, and they're either borrowing more or spending more. And yes, you can call that irresponsible. I would say underneath it, they're playing some game. That game may be, I want to be taken care of because I was never taken care of as a child. That game could be, I'm inauthentic and I don't want anyone to really realize who I am and find out who I really am. And so I'm going to just keep hiding behind the material things that I'm buying. But they're playing some game. I think it's too easy to just say they're being irresponsible, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to be with money. There's some game that's being played, and I think it's important for the individual to tap into that game.
To find out what that game could be.
Right.
For example, a game would be, I don't want you to know. I know people who would go out to people with dinner.
Right.
And they would never pick up they would never let somebody else pick up the check.
Right.
Or if they did pick up the check, they would never tell the person what they owe them.
Right.
It's like it's always on me. It's always on me. The debt always runs to me.
Right.
You would say there's a game in there.
There is a game. And again, I'll just take myself. I know that there was a time when I didn't feel like I was taken care of by my parents. And so if I was going out to dinner like you just described, I would want someone else to pick it up. Without even being conscious about it, I would create, part of the game was just creating the environment and choosing the people that I knew that would pay the bill. And so I got to be taken care of. That's one game. Another game may be, I'm not enough. I don't think of myself as enough. And it's a way to prove myself not being enough by having someone else, just use the dinner example, having somebody else always pay for my dinner. So now I get to be right about not being enough and being less than that person or other people. So there's always a game that's being played. People are clever. People are really, really clever and funny. They're being humans. You know, it's just they'll find a way to just say I'm being irresponsible, but underneath there's something else going on. And I think it's important to tap into what's really going on.
The game is kind of the game underneath sounds hostile.
Yes. It's chaotic.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
It's chaotic. It's confusing.
It's a way of saying screw you to the world.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
It is. There's a lot of anger there. It's actually the little kid. It's the little kid that's hooting and hollering and screaming and tugging on the shirt and just saying, notice me, notice me. Something went wrong or something is wrong, and I want you to know about it. You know, and I'm gonna create whatever chaos and havoc that I need to create in order for you, and the you is almost an illusion, for you to notice.
I guess it's not uncanny for me to read from the American Psychological Association. They came out recently in a survey to say that the number one source of stress for 73% of Americans is money. So what you're describing is these games that people play, but it's creating obviously a lot of stress, and it's interfering with relationships and looking for jobs, keeping jobs,
right.
Getting paid by jobs,
right.
Being able to allocate and negotiate with other people regarding money, whether it's picking up a check or getting a good salary for your
right.
earnings. So I think that it's creating more. And why would you think that we use money in such a way that we have to play these games, Nick?
Well, again, money is a vehicle that allows us to play or tap into these games. It's a vehicle that allows me, for example, to be right that I'm not enough or I'm less than someone else. Or even, you know, you mentioned the percentage about stress. I mean, that in itself is a game. You know, I get to be stressed. I get to make myself significant because I am stressed about money. You know, money can be, you know, another vehicle that money sometimes gets used is to not connect with the people around you, with your family. You know, in my household, instead of talking about how we loved each other and how grateful we were that we had our health, we talked about not having enough money. And that became the topic of conversation. So I think that the game that we played in my household was, I'm afraid of intimacy. I'm afraid of being connected. I'm afraid of really just getting grounded in what's important, which is human beings being with each other and loving each other. Instead, we talked about money and what we didn't have.
Well, let's talk about straightening out your attitude towards money. And let's say starting right now, what do you have? People refuse to do budgets. They don't want to really look at it, but you can. What do you have? What could you afford? Where's the next one coming from? What can you not do? Rule of life. If you're in debt, you can't spend money.
Right.
Well, what do you think of that, Nick? That does mean we are coming from scarcity rather than abundance.
Right. Right.
What do you think?
I think, you know, one of my rule of thumbs is you should always have 9 months of savings. If you were to either lose your job or decide to quit and, you know, take an eat, pray, love experience and, you know, go to India. But I think having that outlook that I always have 9 months is something I recommend. Taking a quick step back, I think the first part in this process of getting a handle on money is, what's the context you're operating out of? Is my context abundance or is it scarcity? And really getting in tune with that, because that drives everything else.
What's that difference? Give me a description of a context of it.
Well, the context that you're going to choose, which is either going to be abundance or scarcity. Abundance is possibilities. There's enough out there. Scarcity, there's chaos. There's not enough. The context will then impact how money occurs to me, my relationship to money, how it comes at me. And then how it occurs to me is going to drive my actions and even my non-actions, which will then produce the result. So I could produce a budget, for example. I could hire a financial advisor. But if my context is still scarcity and chaos and playing games, money's then going to occur to me as a vehicle to play these games and, you know, be stuck where I'm stuck, and then I'm going to take the same actions and non-actions. That's why people get frustrated by budgets or working with a financial planner, because they forgot to shift choose a different context, an empowering context. So abundance would be a context that's empowering. Scarcity would be disempowering. And I really believe, and I can't say it enough, start there. I think that's the most important step.
Start where?
Choosing an empowering context of abundance, which is filled with possibilities.
How do you do that? I mean, those are good words.
Love those words, right?
Yeah, choosing an empowering one. It's good. It's good. It's good. Let's break it down. How do you do it?
Well, first of all, it's getting in touch with what is your current context. Is really getting present to and bringing a consciousness to what context are you operating out of.
What does that mean, context?
But context meaning just get present to, What world am I in? Am I in the world of empowerment and abundance, or am I in the world of disempowerment and scarcity?
How would you know the difference?
You work with someone like me. Or kidding aside, you get present to how do I view money? Like, how is money coming at me? What's my relationship to it?
Isn't it kind of the real difference between positive and negative attitudes? I mean, if you have a positive attitude, isn't that an abundant attitude? And whereas a negative attitude is one of scarcity.
Sometimes, you know, I could be positive about money, but still be in a disempowering conversation. You know, because I could be positive that, hey, I'm positive. Money's really great for me to get what I want from people. I can be controlling of them. So I'm really positive about it. But being controlling of people is actually a very disempowering conversation. It's actually a scarcity conversation, because if I need to control you, that means something's missing in me or in you or in the relationship. So it's getting present and then choosing. Sometimes it's really that simple. The present, getting present and conscious is probably the step that's really, really important and can be challenging.
Yes, and I feel, you know, when you're speaking about that, that could be somewhat confusing, I think, when you're speaking about the context. Scarcity and abundance, I think, as Armand, you're saying, it could be positive, negative. It's waking up in the morning and saying, oh, it's such a beautiful day. I'm not going to be afraid of things. I'm going to be open and receptive to whatever is coming my way. But you're speaking about there's a few steps here that we need to get kind of a better assessment, like, and very much when you're saying very specifically, how do you view money? So if I was to wake up and say, gee, I need to go and I need to get a better job, make more money because I need to pay off that debt, or I need to buy that car, or I need to buy. So if it's that much task oriented, I would think you're definitely going to a scarcity.
Correct.
Very narrow, very fearful.
Right.
Whereas if I open up and I say, okay, it's going to come, I'm going to relax with it, it's going to get paid off, and I will perhaps be better attuned to what it is I really need and what I may not need, and the relationships that I form around that need and not need.
But Linda, yeah. During that time, when you say, okay, I'm in debt, it's going to come, do you spend more money?
Oh, absolutely not, of course. No, I think you exercise a valid truth to yourself and say, okay, this is where I'm at right now. Again, looking at the budget and without a fear component and without a restricted component, because I think that that is a negative component that goes to that scarcity. The abundance to me would be simply to say, okay, it will come. In time I will do it, but perhaps right now I need to be more attuned to what it is I really need or don't need. Maybe I could kind of tighten the belt, as they say. And I think a lot of these things are also coming from, would you say, Nick, when you speak about your parents, the depression and the effect that our parents have had upon us and the vast differences in our society today as to what it is I do need today and what it is I don't need. Can I skip that, cup of Starbucks this morning? I mean, I think it really comes down to we live in such a what seems to be an abundant, needy kind of society and culture that sometimes I think assessing what it is I do need and don't need might also present some challenge for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, Nick's Papadopoulos, also known as Coach Nick, and Linda Vanella with us. When we get back from our break, I want to look at the difference between men's attitude towards money and women's attitude towards money. If there is such a thing, if we dare go there, I'm real curious because there could be something very, very distinct. This is Armand DeMille. We're with you at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, maybe how about a little more music about money just so you can keep it in your mind, and then we will continue our program. We'll be right back.
Money. Do it all for the money.
She works so hard for the money. Donna, 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 don't you ever. I remember when this song first came out, the reception to it, about women who were kind of standing up and saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. So women's attitude towards money and men's attitude towards money, is there a difference? Is there a difference? Is there something that goes on that's a difference? What if you're a woman who is deciding to live at home, have children, and your husband goes out to work and bring home the paycheck? What's that like? What's that like? What's it like depending on him? And what's it like when it doesn't work out too well?
Well, unfortunately, Armand, it doesn't work out in many, many cases. What I have seen in my professional life among many women I know, where initially you might make an agreement to, I'll stay home and raise the family, well, you go out and let's live on the one paycheck. But as it turns out, whether he jumps from job to job, whether he's unable to maintain a good income with the one job, whether different circumstances, and then she finds herself feeling overly dependent. He starts perhaps dictating or trying to understand how is it that she needs this and that. So there's conflicts, and then she decides, okay, maybe I'll go ahead and pursue a career. Maybe we'll co-finance. We'll get a job together, and we'll put our incomes together. And yes, it does create a lot of stress in relationships because of that attachment to the breadwinner. It becomes not even so much the attachment to the money as to what it can do for me, but the role and how it defines me as either the breadwinner, the protector, the woman to stay home, the homemaker, who raises the family, who makes the bread, who pays the bills, and then, of course, who distinguishes how this money is going to be spent. So goal orientation. So it definitely plays a very, very, very big role in how couples begin their relationship.
This may be a little too fixed, but somehow a man wants to bring home the bacon. You know, I mean, this is the idea. The man brings home the bacon, the woman takes care of the house. That was the original concept. But then marriage is a funny thing, and having babies is a funny thing, because once you have your home and your babies have replaced your affection and your wife gives more affection to the babies than she does to you, then you come home and you say, all right, what am I going to do at home? Well, I'm going to buy a bigger home. I'll show it to all my friends. Then I'll have a lot of friends. Is that what your motivation is? What's your motivation for doing any more other than getting by? And as the sexuality between the partners dies, as the romance dies, so does the man's earning power die. He just doesn't care anymore. What does he care? It's all going to be the same. If he's competing with all the other men out there, if he's in a competitive world, maybe he wants to win the game. Maybe that's all he cares about. Then that would be a motivation. But if he doesn't have that motivation of competition, he's just not going to put his best earning foot forward. Now, in this case, then, the woman now, or a person, the partner, looks around her and she sees my house is nice, but Susie's house is nicer. Why can't we have a house like Susie's? So she leans to make more money. And this puts an additional pressure back. So this spiral of what the money is about becomes really, truly unattractive and untruthful. Which leads me to the word about authenticity, which is one of Nick's favorite words. So, Nick, where does authenticity have to play in this?
It's a big part of it. Because what you're describing is the dynamic that's being played out, which is really the games that are being played out. And people, you know, authenticity plays a role because once you can connect to the authenticity, then you know what the game is or what's driving you to the game in the first place. So it is the, you know, quote unquote, taking a step back and saying, okay, time out. What's really going on here? Why am I doing what I'm doing or saying what I'm saying and making the decisions I'm making? Is it because there's a power struggle, or is it because I've lost the attention of my wife, or whatever it may be? So I think authenticity is a huge, plays a huge role, and it's key in getting you back on track and grounded.
When you speak about authenticity, I also think too, Armand, that when you speak about men in their middle age, I think about my own sons, and the situation where I know one is speaking about wanting to have a more secure base financial for his children, thinking about college and the expenses that are coming down the pike, which I don't know that that plays out in other people's lives. So I think that there's goals, and I think that that could also help a couple to come together in having utilize and be able to have joint goals of how their money is being used, whether it's decorating their home or whether it's putting money aside for the children's future college. I think it could be used in an authentic way to try to almost eradicate the games and try to utilize it perhaps in a way that could help the marriage become a little bit stronger and more definitive.
Right. It's coming up jointly together on what's important to the family. Look, I mean, some couples become passionate about making contributions to causes that are of interest to them, that are important to them, and then that becomes the driver of wanting to make the money. And that's great. And that there's an authenticity because you're connected to that cause for whatever your reason is, and you do that together, and now your connection as a couple becomes even stronger while making a difference in the world.
This is Armand DeMille, Nick Papadopoulos, and Linda Vanella. So, questions about money and your attitude towards money. Do you find yourself in the hole all the time? Do you find yourself in debt? Do you say to yourself, there's no jobs out there? There's no way to earn a living? It's like I look at it, and I look at it all the time, and I listen to people scream. It's about the opportunities. It's about the situation. It's about them. It's not about us. It's about us being part of the 99% and not the 1%. But everybody I've ever known who has decided to step up to the financial plate and say, no, I'm going to solve this, I'm going to have abundance, has succeeded. It's just what gets in your way and what you have to fight along the way. So our number here is 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls today as well, 212-209-2900. So stepping up to the plate, stepping up means I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to make it happen. Here's where you need somebody to help you. This is where I think a coach, a therapist, or somebody to help you as a guide is important, because they have to remind you. Now, I know, Nick, what you do is you don't tell people what to do.
Right.
You just remind people.
That's correct. Remind them and also bring present what they're doing and why they may be doing it, right? So, again, their actions or non-actions are aligned with their context. And so it's bringing present what their actions and non-actions are and what that could be driven by, and really supporting them in going down that path and going into that journey to find out what's happened, what has me in this working in this context that are then driving these actions and non-actions. My role becomes very easy. You know, my role is just to keep saying, okay, move a little to the right and move a little to the left. You have all the answers already. That's your good news, you know, for the listeners out there. Your good news is you actually have the keys to unlock the future.
And the bad news is?
The bad news is that it's you that has the keys, that you get in your own way because you actually think there's some magic pill out there, that there's something else out there that is eluding you, or again, the context you're operating out of is that the world is too tough, I'm not smart enough, I don't have the connections, I don't have the right information, but once I do, then I can become wealthy and abundant. No, you have the keys. It really starts with your mind.
And it starts today.
It starts right now.
Well, give me something about the attitude of abundance that would start right now, that a person would have starting right this minute. If they're at work, for example, and somebody's at work and they're saying, here I am working in this place, and I don't want to be here. I want to be with my lover, but I've got my job. And
right. So one would be writing, for example, in a journal of what you're grateful, right? And really, the purpose of that exercise is twofold. One is to remind you of what you have. And as you remind yourself of what you have, you're connecting to that because that's something that you enjoy or brings you satisfaction. And I'm a believer that that's going to create more. The second is you start to automatically shift that context into, oh, this job, this world I'm in, this family I'm in is an opportunity. So if I start to look at, hey, I'm grateful that I have a job, actually, because it's an opportunity to build my resume to get the next job. So now I'm changing my context, with it, which then again is aligned with changing my actions or the non-actions I take.
212-209-2900. Let's take one of your call if that's working today. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi. Hello?
Hello there.
Hi. My name is Nick.
Hello, Nick. Good. Nick, meet Nick.
Love it.
Nice to meet you, Nick.
Nice to meet you, too.
First, I'd like to say thank you. I really enjoy your show, Armand.
Good.
But this subject is really on point for me. I'd like to make a couple of points. One is I'm a single dad. So career-wise, I've had to maybe give up some of the career-driven attitude in order to just be around more for the kids. And the second thing I wanted to bring up was that I was married for a time, and with my partner, we had a very big disconnect as far as money was concerned. And any time we would try to talk about it, we'd end up in a fight. And, you know, it would be, you know, we wouldn't be able to have an adult conversation about it. So we were just very different places. And they were a generous person, and I was okay with being generous, but still at the same time watching out for the bottom line.
So what do you think made the difference?
I just think the other person just felt like automatically they would be, you know, replenished all the time, and I felt more of a sense of responsibility to, you know, not overreach. So it ended up not working out, but it was, you know, one of the things was we weren't able to have, you know, an adult conversation about money in a way that we were able to resolve some of the issues.
So what do you need now in relationship to this?
Now I'm just kind of more working on myself and, you know, trying to, you know, turn the corner financially. And that's it. I'm working and I've changed a number of jobs and, you know, thankful for work and happy to be here now trying to move up.
Let me ask you about changing jobs. What happens?
A number of different things. Some of them, you know, they ran out of work at my level. Some of them I felt I needed to grow more professionally. And some of them I felt that they took advantage of me. And when another opportunity came along, I decided to go in that direction.
So question between you and your dad. See, here's one of the questions that come up. How did you get along with him?
I get along with him okay. He's still around, so. But I do have some differences.
And what are the major differences you have with him?
Well, he works a lot in philanthropy, but, you know, sometimes I feel like he didn't spend enough time, you know, with the kids when we were growing up. You know, motivating us.
Hey, Nick, this is Nick. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Nick.
You know, to Armand's point about the relationship with Dad, so you know, one thing that you could consider is, you know, there may be some resentment or disappointment that you have in the way your dad operated, you know, in the time he spent with philanthropy and work and with others. And there may be a game that you've created, which is, well, if you're working hard, you're making money, and that takes you away from family. And, you know, one thing to consider is you can actually have both. You can actually work hard and make money and be with your family. In fact, the money might allow you to spend more time with your family. That's, you know, that would be a different context to work from, which is by earning more money, I actually get to spend more time with my kids. So just something to consider, that the relationship with your dad and how he was may be impacting the decisions, the actions or non-actions that you're taking. Just you know, something to try on.
All right. I appreciate the suggestion. Thank you.
And thank you for calling in, Nick. Thank you for teaching us.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time as well.
Have sure. 212-209-2900. We're taking callers. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much. I'm just enjoying everything you ever say. It's just so profound, and I appreciate it. And my problem, I was laid off 3 years ago. And I never quite recovered. I did try. I went to support groups for those out of work. If I reworked the resume once, I did it 1,000 times. And at the end of 3 years, I just feel like I'm irrelevant. I feel obsolete. You know, everything you had said previously, I've worked with job coaches, too. And I've worked with therapists. Everyone just seems to think, well, you know, maybe you should go back to school. I'm 60 now. I grew up in an unambitious family, and I was never one of those people like, oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up. I never knew. I found a niche, you know, in the world that I was able to make a living at, but now it's become sort of, it's somewhat obsolete because now everything is about a content strategist or, you know, names have changed. The terminology has changed. There's all this corporate jargon. People say, well, what's your brand? I'm not a brand. I'm just a person who always worked and earned a living. But that doesn't seem to, you know, cut it these days.
What's your first name?
I feel such a radical change.
What's your name?
I'm sorry?
What's your name?
My field?
Your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Jane.
Jane.
Jane, yes.
Hey, Jane. Let's consider that you are a solitary bird. Let's consider that maybe somewhere in this morass, in this world of the financial world, you stand out your own way. And that what you've done is you've claimed your independence. You've said, no, I'm not part of it. I'm apart from it. And if you try to force me into it, I resist. And if I try to get in without my will, I fight myself. So maybe you are just where you need to be. Because it sounds to me also, Jane, that there's another part of you, or well, that's trying to be part of the financial world and part of the earnings money world. There's a part of you that gives a great deal, probably in causes and actions and things that you do with your time. So are you a teacher?
No, I was in the editing field.
No, but I mean, are you a teacher in the world? Do you help people?
I used to be. I've become this negative thing that I never was.
Yeah, so that happened, right?
Yeah, it happened.
Okay, now let me tell you something. Recently. It's a very small thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever break a golf ball in half? A tennis ball. Did you ever break a tennis ball in half? A tennis ball. Do you ever break one in half?
A tennis ball?
Yeah. Tennis ball. It's got furry on the outside, and it's got this kind of soft skin on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you break a tennis ball in half, it goes for the wrong side. It flips. And sometimes people live their life as if they're rough. And it takes very little to just flip back to the soft inside. It sounds to me like you just flipped over into the roughness. And you got to find your tenderness again. Because I think whether or not you're earning money and whether you're part of this earning world, you are a beautiful person and you have a lot to give. And I'd love to see you sharing yourself, Jane, as much as you can with this world.
Thank you.
You know, thank you.
Well, your show, I mean, just hearing it today, that was providence.
This is it. Maybe this is our beginning. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. My special thanks to Nick Papadopoulos for being with us. He will be with us again. He's got a great deal to teach. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more stuff. And if you want to get a copy of today's show, you can go to WBAI.org, go to thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend Nick. Thank you. Linda, thank you very much.
Radical right wing has been fervent in their attempts to shame and blame black women's reproductive decisions, placing billboards in black communities equating abortion with genocide. But where do black women stand? On Wednesday, March 21st, between 9 and 10 p.m., Joy of Resistance will present a live conversation between black anti-choice and pro-choice advocates on abortion and other reproductive issues within the black community. Guests will be Catherine Davis, author of the Billboard Campaign, Reverend Alethea Smith Withers of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, Michelle Colon, a leader in the recent fight against the Personhood Amendment in Mississippi, and Dr. Freda Bush, a supporter of abstinence-only education. So tune in Wednesday, March 21st, 9 to 10 p.m. for a conversation on issues that are becoming increasingly relevant to the black community.
Define our existence.